This is FM 100.5 and 101.9. AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
Good afternoon, Rutherford County. It's absolutely gorgeous out there today. And I want to let you know that the first part of the show is brought to you by Golden Coin Connection, and that's 2568 South Church Street beside Gateway Tire Center, and Pastor Larry Dunn of ERO Ministries, and partners Chris Chico and Wayne Eberly buy scrap gold, jewelry, platinum, coins, and silverware. They have vintage sports collectibles and even some great antiques. And for a fair and honest evaluation of your collectibles, take them by and see Pastor Larry Dunn and his partners today at the Golden Coin Connection at 2568 South Church Street, and a second store now. That's at 5631 New Nashville Highway, and you can reach them at 890-2646. You know, this has been a real blessing for me, this show, because when I get to go back in time and get to see some of my old buddies and we get to renew friendships and get to make new friendships, it's been something that's special. And I wish everybody, and I guess that's one of the reasons we have the show, is that we can share some of the more interesting things, especially about the people and that have grown up here or currently in Rutherford County and have done so many things that a lot of us just wish that we could have done. And I have Jim Freeman on today, and we went to school together many, many years ago. Jim is 1 year behind me.
A lot younger.
Yes, a whole lot younger. And like a lot of kids growing up at that time, you went to training school initially. Although you were born in Memphis, which I did not realize until today.
I was adopted. I was adopted when I was 10 days old and brought back here to Murfreesboro. My parents lived there. My dad had a furniture store on the square, Freeman Furniture Company, next to Goldstein's.
I didn't put that together.
Yeah.
Well, I will be. So you were actually grew up there right here in downtown on the square.
All but 10 days.
And I'll guarantee you Mom and Dad bought furniture from your dad.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. Was good.
Thank you for that. I'm wearing a pair of shoes or a new shirt or something thanks to your parents.
Now, Jim, you're one of the more interesting fellows because you have really led a charmed life, and we were talking about that earlier. Just going to school at training school is really a major part of your heritage.
It is. The background I got there in discipline, manners, not to mention English from Mary Frances Snell.
Oh, yes.
And I thought I was going to die in that class, but I made straight A's in English all the way through high school just about because of what she did.
I didn't know what an A was in English.
Well, I probably wouldn't either if I hadn't had her.
Now, you had some interesting people that were in your class, too.
Yeah. Don Midgett was one. T. McFerrin, who's highly successful coach in Georgia. Tennessee, too.
You know, I ran into T. about 3 months ago, and I hadn't seen him, I guess, in over 40 years. And he has not changed one bit.
No.
I mean, but you can go into the who's in your class. Mm-hmm. I think it's like class of 59. The class of 60 was extremely successful.
Yeah. Ransom Jones was in that class. A fellow named Danny Dieter, who I think is a retired general now. He went to West Point.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Had a sister named Martha, and she was in
your class, right? And her younger one, their dad was at the
VA hospital. And I think he was a psychiatrist there.
Yeah. But we've had several that have been real successful. Ed Lowry, of course, Ed Lowry didn't go to campus school, but he was in high school with me, and Charles Smith the same way. But
Ed was kind of jealous of you having the business on the square, so he just moved his home on the square.
Yeah, I'll tell you
he's already won.
He's way up on that. I've heard that that's just absolutely gorgeous place.
It is a beautiful place. And I think Andrea, she had been the one to design it.
There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, he would have been out on his motorcycle doing something. And then you went to Central.
Went to Central High School, and that was some of the glory days. We probably should have won the state championship in basketball when Ed Lowry and Bob Nunnery and those guys were playing.
Best high school team I ever saw.
And then got beat and by Hampton. The biggest guy they had was 6'1", and he came off the bench. And they beat us 44-40, the only game we lost.
I have never seen a game like that, and I hope I never see a game like that again, because there was something. I was reading an article that Raymond Johnson had written in the Tennessean, and I think even Fred Russell wrote an article that Central High School had the best high school basketball team that was ever in the state of Tennessee that year. I mean, they were awesome. Just
they
unbeatable.
Were. They were.
And then this seemed like all the wheels fell off just on that one night.
Yeah, they had a little guy came in and shot, hit like, and that's before the three-point shot. And the two little guards, Nave was one of them, and they sit out there and do two-hand set shots, black tennis shoes. Didn't have a football team, so they started playing basketball in like October or something.
But they did have one thing we didn't have, and that was oxygen on the sideline.
Yeah.
You remember that?
Yeah.
I mean, they were running them, like, and they'd come on. As soon as they did, they'd pop that oxygen mask on them. It's unbelievable.
I guess they were used to living in the hills way up there and just got used to thin air up there.
Well, now, like I say, you've led an interesting life. You went to the university, and you got to really meet some extremely nice people that you and I have both known for years. But I didn't realize until you and I started talking a little bit earlier that you had worked for the Nashville Banner, and you worked with the icon, as far as I'm concerned, of sports information, sports writing.
Fred Russell,
was over sports.
He picked the All-American team for Look magazine, and he was president of the Football Writers Association for several years, and a close friend of Bear Bryant's. If Fred Russell had still been alive when Bear Bryant died, Fred Russell would have gotten the story when Bear was going to retire.
Probably even done the eulogy.
He may have. I don't
know. Yeah, because Bear Bryant didn't let too many people inside like that.
Yeah. Of course, when Bear was an assistant at Vanderbilt, I believe, wasn't he? I think that's when he got to know Fred Russell.
Yeah, and of course, he was at Kentucky, too, and then Texas A&M. He made a number of stops before he got to his the final one where he has his statue at.
I got to write a column. Every now and then, he'd let somebody else on the staff write a column for him. But very rarely did he let a first-year guy write a column for him. Well, I was one of the lucky ones, and I got to write one.
Oh, my.
And I kept that thing, and I don't even remember what's on now, but it was a piece of crap. I thought, oh, this is Mr. Russell's column, and there's nothing's. And he told me he thought it was a good column, but I think he's just being nice.
He was a nice guy. He really was, but he wouldn't have told you that it wasn't one if it hadn't been. And it seemed like that you were just destined to be in public relations, except you did do a stint in the military.
Yeah.
And that had to have been interesting because you were in the Navy.
That was real interesting. I had spent too much time on recreation instead of a course of study. And
join the club.
Was asked to come back when my attention span increased. And so I decided I better go in the Navy. So I did, and grew up a little bit in the Navy and came back after, and I was okay after that. But while I was in the Navy, I was assigned to a ship out of San Diego, but I did my training in San Diego.
Beautiful place.
And got assigned a ship there, and I went to Hong Kong, and in fact I was in Tokyo. I was in Tokyo for the 1964 Olympics.
Wow.
I got to see a soccer game between Argentina and Ghana. It ended in a 1-1 tie, which wasn't really exciting. Well, the officers got all the good tickets. They got the basketball tickets and the boxing tickets and track and field and all that, and they gave us Argentina and Ghana.
Now, I have never understood how they could call that football. We have football here.
Mm-hmm.
Soccer is just something else. I mean, I know it's an exciting game to the Europe. Well, worldwide, I guess.
Yeah, it is. It's number one sport worldwide.
And our kids seem to have adopted it here in school. I mean, there's soccer teams everywhere. But I guess maybe that I kind of outgrew or outaged that particular sport, because I really never found a whole lot of interest in it, although one of my grandkids plays, because that makes it interesting.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it does. But when we were in school, I don't think they had it. I know Central didn't. I don't think it was even a club sport.
No.
At Central or sideline activity or anything.
I didn't even know there was soccer, period. Now, you were on what type of ship in the Navy?
I was on the USS Monticello, which was an LSD, a landing ship dock. Mm-hmm. And it was one that would carry troops, Marines, mm-hmm. and would carry the boats that they would make, the landing crafts that they would make beach assaults with.
Right.
And we had done a tour of the Western Pacific, mm-hmm. and we're headed back to the United States. I was supposed to get married on August the 28th, and we left there about the 1st of August. Mm-hmm. And we got to the International Dateline, okay. which is the point between 2nd Fleet and 7th Fleet. Mm-hmm. If we'd gotten across that, they couldn't have turned us back without a lot of extra paperwork. Hmm. But Vietnamese PT boat fired on an American destroyer that night. And we weren't quite to the International Dateline, so they turned us around, brought us back. We went to Okinawa. And picked up troops and went to Vietnam and steamed up and down the coast for 54 days.
Did you receive any bore fire at that time?
No. Not at that time we didn't, know. No. But I ended up getting married in November instead of August.
Yeah, well, there are sacrifices.
Yeah.
There. But did you ever actually drop any of the Marines off on shore?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we did several exercises. One was called Dagger Thrust. And the point was to try to keep the Viet Cong moving, not mm-hmm. let them have a chance to rest. Mm-hmm. And just keep them moving all the time, outrun supplies and all that mm-hmm. kind of stuff. Don't give them a chance to rest. And every day, we'd send these boats in. We'd ballast down and be a string of LSDs, and they would drop these Marines mm-hmm. In the water, mm-hmm. like at you know, about every 50 yards, they'd drop another one, something like that. And a ship behind us was doing it, a ship in front of us was doing it. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as the last ones got in the water, they all turn and go straight towards the beach in one big long line. And then we'd go back and
just
drop.
Just like a big frontal assault?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, about 20 or 30 of them at one time coming in, uh-huh. so they couldn't get away from them. And we'd do that for 2 or 3 days. They don't give them a chance to set up or anything. That worked great.
Did they ever receive fire while they're...
They did, yeah. Oh, yeah, they did.
Before they
did.
Ever got to shore?
Yeah, they did, because they saw us coming. They knew it. But we were far enough out where we weren't going to get hit mm-hmm. with anything, but we could still see it. We could see the jets coming in and napalming them and all kind of stuff like that. But we got fired at one time. I think 1 month we got combat pay, like $65 or something. Some guy got loose with a mortar and one bounced, hit right behind the ship. Made a big explosion.
Now the craft that the Marines were using, mm-hmm. they're not exactly like the ones that were used in D-Day, were they?
No,
were covered.
These were covered. Mm-hmm. These were covered and had wheels on, mm-hmm. and they would actually drive them up way up onto the beach as far as they could, mm-hmm. and they were protected. I mean, you know, it was metal, but they were also heavy, and the motors were right up on top. But if they ever went under, they wouldn't come back up, and yeah. that was the thing. The Marines had to really scramble out, and sometimes they didn't all make it out.
We have gotten a whole lot better with our technology last 20,
yes,
30 years.
Yes, we sure have.
It's amazing. Mm-hmm. And talking about technology and motor craft and stuff like that, another very interesting phase of your life has been actually working with NASCAR, mm-hmm. and which is one of the more interesting sports that I've ever been connected with. And I can remember all back. I don't remember actually when they were racing at Daytona on the sand and yeah. all of that. I think is part of what got
started. That was the wild days.
But there's also a legend part of it that the moonshine industry was a big part of the start of NASCAR.
That was no legend. That was true.
That's true.
That was true, yeah. Uh-huh. In the hills of North Carolina and Georgia and
Kentucky and Tennessee.
Kentucky and Tennessee, but mm-hmm. I think probably a lot of it, well, that's where the drivers came from. North mm-hmm. Carolina, Tennessee, Georgia, a lot of them did. Mm-hmm. And that's where they started. And they would they'd meet and they'd do their work during the week and get everything needed to be on for Saturday night. And then they'd race their cars on Sunday.
Now, you originally started, if I think I'm right, is at Daytona, right?
That's correct, yeah. I left MTSU in 1979. I've been here for 10 years as a sports information director.
Yeah.
And went to Daytona in 1979, and it was just it was an out of the blue thing almost. I hadn't applied for a job, wasn't looking for one, and Daytona had somebody quit that for whatever. Oh, I know, it was Mike Joy. He went over to Motor Racing Network. So I took his job, and then the the folks that were looking for somebody called around to some of the other riders. They had covered NASCAR, Larry Woody and Joe Caldwell, and some of them in Chattanooga and Birmingham and stuff. And that was when MTSU, the year after MTSU, had hosted the Mideast Region Basketball Tournament with Magic Johnson and all that bunch were here.
I was there. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, I was the sports information director then. And everybody thought, well, you know, we'll screw that up. MTSU don't know what they're doing, all that sort of stuff. And we put on a show.
Everything went
like it was. It's one of those magic moments where everything goes. I mean, it's not anything any one person did. It's the things that probably 500 different people did, right, all at the same time.
Do you remember the Tennessee Notre Dame game?
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever heard a crowd at a basketball game as loud as that one?
That was loud. That was really loud.
I think it damaged my hearing, and I'm being serious. I had the pleasure of being on the floor that night, and when Notre Dame came in, and their center, he could walk between you and the sun, and you'd never see the sun. Lambeer was that big.
Yeah, Lambeer.
Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. But you guys did an absolutely super job. It wasn't just people in the seats. I mean, you had people standing all around. I don't know how you packed them all in.
Well, we got as many in there as NCAA would let us, and the fire marshal would let us.
Right.
But yeah, it was.
It was a show.
It was. It was a real show, and it was unusual. And I'm pleased to be a part of it because it was.
You were a major part of it.
Well, and that's kind of what led me to Daytona. Some of the guys that they talked to, Caldwell and Woody. A couple of guys from Chattanooga, Clyde Bolton from Birmingham, and they said they were looking for somebody, and Caldwell gave them my name, and they checked with these other guys and said, yeah. I said, in fact, he just ran the media operations for an NCAA basketball tournament, did a great job. So they called me, asked me if I'd send them some stuff. So I'd had a couple of promotions. I'd finished third in a national contest in 1969, sponsored by Chevrolet, which was the 75th anniversary of football, for our budget group. You know, we weren't competing against the Big Ten or SEC or any of those, but for the budget that we had, and we put a promotion on. And I won third place and got a black and white TV set.
Whoa, yeah. Big time.
I'm like, well, that's all we had then. Yeah. That's all we had. But I sent them that stuff, and I'd done some posters. We did a wanted thing for one of our players, and sent them stuff like that. And next thing I know, they called me down for an interview. Wow. And so I flew down there. And
how was it going down there? I mean, knowing that you were going to one of the biggest shows in America or anywhere in the world.
Well, I was thinking, you know, I've got a job. It's not like I have to have a job.
Yeah.
You know, and the worst thing that happened, I'm back doing what I was doing.
So in the greatest place in the world right here.
So I was, I go along with that. That's been home for me. But I was lucky and had a good talk with them. And we knew some mutual people, some of the sports writers and stuff. I interviewed with Jim Foster, who was the president of Daytona Speedway at the time. He basically hired me right then. So
now, the big time drivers when you went down there, who were the top, say, 10 or you know, so.
Well, that was, you know, of course, been Petty and Yarborough, Benny Parsons, David Pearson.
How would you compare? My kids and I, we argue about this a lot, but I am a big Richard Petty fan. I mean, I always have been, and I loved all the drivers at that time. Do you think the skills in the late 70s, early 80s, how would they compare to the skills of the drivers right now?
Oh, gosh, that's hard to say. Those the early guys had to learn with a lot less, not a lot less equipment, but less engineered equipment.
Right.
They didn't have any of the cool suits and power steering, and they'd run 40, 50 races a year instead of 32 or 33. It's just hard to say. I'll tell you something that Bud Moore said about Dale Earnhardt. Mm-hmm. And Bud Moore's in the sport for a long time.
This is senior.
Yeah, this is the one that had Bobby Allison drove for him. Earnhardt drove for him for a while. Mm-hmm. Several other good drivers have driven for him, too. Somebody asked him about Earnhardt. What's the difference in Earnhardt and all the other drivers you've had? And he says, during a race, there's opportunities to make a move, to squeeze into a hole mm-hmm. that you're not sure your car is going to get in. Mm-hmm. He said, all of them would do it some of the time. Mm-hmm. He said, Earnhardt would do it every time.
So that is probably one of the reasons he got his nickname, the Intimidator.
Yeah. Or Ironhead, whichever nickname you like.
But the guy had no fear, did he?
Well, no, he really didn't.
Or at least he didn't show any fear.
Yeah. There were a lot of claims that he had extraordinary vision. You know, in fact, they were joking one time, said he had 15/20 vision or something like that. But his peripheral vision, the reason he stayed out of wrecks, he says peripheral vision was so good he could see his own ears, which I don't believe that. But that's the way they were talked about him.
Did they have spotters back then like they do now?
They did, but the communication wasn't near as good. They had communication only with their driver. Now mm-hmm. they can go to any other driver's channel and talk to their spotter and stuff like that. So mm-hmm. communication is a lot better now.
Now, Fireball Roberts was before you or after that?
He died in 64.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I still remember the day that happened.
But his gravesite is in Daytona. So he was
really?
From Daytona, yeah. Yeah, and he was a good one, too. Those early guys, and Ped's daddy, Lee Petty, won the first Daytona 500, mm-hmm. you know, and Buck Baker and those guys, and they didn't have any fear, and they were a totally different breed. Buck Baker won a race one time in Rockingham, North Carolina, and mm-hmm. he didn't live far from there, and he took the wins. They paid him in cash.
Wow!
And he took the wins and went to his house, invited everybody in for a party. He lived way back off the road in a wooded area. He cut a tree down so they couldn't get out for 3 days. They partied for 3 days. He cut a tree down over his driveway.
Hey, we're talking about a time when they built and rebuilt those cars without a whole lot of manufacturer help. They didn't have all the scientific and upscale things that they do now. But to me, they were just exciting, or maybe even so more so, because of what you were seeing and where you knew it came from. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know. It just seems the modernization of race cars has really changed a lot. And we talk about Daytona, and then you went to Talladega, mm-hmm. which is really a gorgeous track. And maybe
and
one
the
of the
fastest.
More dangerous tracks.
It's probably the most dangerous track.
And they have slowed the cars down to a point mm-hmm. by restrictor racing. Now, can you explain to me why restrictor racing is safer than, and of course I know we've already talked about the speeds, mm-hmm. but why does that make it safer? Because it seems to jam them all up and they're all just almost tied together.
Well, the drivers hate it for that very reason mm-hmm. that you said, but the fans like it because they love the side-by-side racing. When they got up to those speeds where the restrictor plates, so they get up around 210, 212, and the mm-hmm. average speed of a race was close to 200 miles an hour and stuff, mm-hmm. they were single file. Mm-hmm. It was all the way around.
Right.
And fans liked the side-by-side action and stuff, which they got before the speeds got up there, when it was running about 180, 195, 190 miles an hour. And
but now they're partnering up.
They are, and that has to do with the configuration of the cars, I think, as much as anything else.
But doesn't it take away from the single notice of a driver? You're not looking for two drivers. You want one driver
yeah.
out there.
Earnhardt's last race was at Talladega. Their last race that he won mm-hmm. was at Talladega the year before he died at Daytona. Mm-hmm. And I've still got some T-shirts from that race, mm-hmm. the event shirts that had his name on them. And
right.
And he came up through, let me think a minute for him. He came up, I think it was like five laps to go, and he was like in 13th or 14th place. Mm-hmm. And within two laps, he was up right in second place. He just came right through, and everybody's wide open trying to get there, and he passed every one of them. And that was just him. That was one of the most exciting things I'd seen.
Now, how was he able to do that? Was he utilizing the draft?
He was, and he understood it. There were some people that actually think he could see the air around the car, which I don't believe, but somehow or another he had figured it out. When a car does this, the air's coming from this way or something like that. Mm-hmm. And he taught that to Dale Jr. and to Michael Waltrip. Mm-hmm. And Michael won the next two. Well, he won the Daytona 500. Earnhardt was killed, and then he won the next one.
And when Earnhardt was killed, it's my understanding by watching it, because I was watching it on TV with mm-hmm. my boys that day, mm-hmm. it wasn't that he was trying to win himself. He was trying to help Michael win the race, and mm-hmm. it ended up costing him his life.
Yeah. And that was just a weird thing. It wasn't weird him doing that, because I think probably a lot of other people would have done the same thing. Mm-hmm. But it was weird that the way it happened like that. Everybody said, well, it didn't look that bad.
It didn't.
And what people don't understand is, as long as a car, a wrecking car, continues to go in the direction of its momentum, mm-hmm. then the way they're built, chances are good that the driver will walk away or at least not be seriously hurt. Mm-hmm. It's when they stop and change the direction of the momentum. Mm-hmm. Human body's not designed to stop at 200 miles an hour.
Right.
And that's what he did when he went up and hit that wall head on and pushed him back like that. That's what did it. That's what gets him. If you watch the wrecks, the ones that keep sliding or even flipping in the direction that they were going to start with are much more likely not to be hurt bad or even hurt at all. Mm-hmm. It's when their momentum changes, the direction of the momentum changes, they get hurt.
We're going to take a quick break and let you know that this part of the show is brought to you by Pirtle & Howerton Automotive at 2006 North Main Street in Shevable, Tennessee. If you're looking for a Ford, Mercury, Chevrolet, Buick, or GMC, give them a call, 1-800-264-6800, toll free. Pull them up on the internet, PirtleHowerton.com, or better, and it's such a beautiful day today, drive towards Shevable. It's just on your left before you get into downtown Shevable. That's Pirtle & Howerton. And go in and enjoy your day and come back with a brand new car, and I'll guarantee you it'll make you a year.
Play it again, sports!
25 to 50% off. A new shipment of scratch and dent fitness equipment is in at Play It Again Sports on North Thompson Lane. Exercise bikes, ellipticals, treadmills, and more. 25 to 50% off. Save now before the deals are gone.
We interrupt WGNS programming to test our emergency alert system. This is only a test. Those tones will be followed by breaking news or severe weather information. This has been a test of the WGNS Emergency Alert System. Now back to our regular programming on FM 100.5, 101.9, and AM 1450.
Hello, this is Truman Jones. We have a new sponsor and one that you're going to be delighted with. It's National Healthcare Corporation right here in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. And this is where life is celebrated. Discover a different kind of care, one that ensures that you're surrounded by people who make a difference in your life. In 11 states, patients and residents feel right at home at National Healthcare Corporation's more than 130 affiliated healthcare centers and home care offices. Their family of facilities delivers exceptional rehabilitative skilled nursing and extended care in locations that are close to home and family. In line with their longtime commitment to provide a continuum of care to those who need their services at any age. And want to let you know that this is a local business started here, even though it's pretty much all through the Southeast. National Healthcare, Murfreesboro, where life is celebrated.
This is Good Neighbor Events, brought to you by the Rutherford Home Show, Saturday mornings at 11:30 on WGNS, the Omni Hut Restaurant in Smyrna, and AmeriCare Pest Control.
Hello, I'm Dave Gober with First Community Mortgage.
And Dean Higby with South Branch Nursery.
Be sure to tune in every Saturday from 11:30 to 12:30 for the Rutherford Home Show, presented by Old South Properties.
We are joined each week by local professionals to give helpful information about your home and the local community.
We also give you local real estate stats and rate information.
Join us here on WGNS for the Rutherford Home Show every Saturday, 11:30 to 12:30.
Now some Good Neighbor Events from WGNS. The 5th Annual Murfreesboro City School Foundation Gala is coming up Friday night, February the 10th at 7 o'clock at the Stones River Country Club. This year's Hollywood-style celebrity roast focuses on former state representative John Hood. This should be an evening of fun. Tables of eight are $2,500 and individual tickets are $50. Get with Lisa Trail at 893-2313. And the Bald in the Borough events coming up Friday, March the 16th at Lanes, Trains, and Automobiles over on Butler Drive. This is the second annual St. Baldrick's event. It funds children's cancer research. You can help even without shaving your head. Get with Dr. Jeremy Harrison at 542-6773. The 4th Annual Chief Johnny Mosby Memorial Golf Tournament is set for Friday morning, May the 4th, over at the Old Fort Park Golf Course. The fee for a team of four is $300. Registration fees must be submitted by April the 27th. Contact Justin Lemansky at 566-4686. Those are Good Neighbor Events.
Weather Eye.
Sunny to partly cloudy this afternoon. High in the low 60s. Tonight's mainly clear. A low near 39. Increasing clouds Tuesday. High near 65. I'm WGNS meteorologist Laura Lockwood. Right now, it's 63.
At Todd's Complete Auto Care on Southeast Broad Street, we now have a European specialist on staff. Now you don't have to go to the dealer for service and repair on Mercedes, BMW, Volvo, Jaguar, and other Europeans. From oil changes to engine work, we can take care of it on foreign, domestic, and European vehicles. 962-9050.
He knows Rutherford County, and he knows the people of Rutherford County. Truman Jones, here on WGNS AM and FM.
Welcome back with us. We want to let you know that this part of the show is brought to you by Stan McNabb Automotive, where they provide quality vehicles from Chevrolet, Dodge, Jeep, Ford, and Cadillac to the Murfreesboro, McMinnville, and Shelbyville, Tennessee area. Their large selection ensures that they have a vehicle for everyone, no matter what it is you're looking for. And for a quality used car in Tullahoma, visit their dealership located at 2000 North Jackson Street. They have a large inventory of pre-owned cars, trucks, SUVs, and minivans to select from. At Stan McNabb Automotive, they pride themselves in the quality that they offer on all of their used cars, which makes them a major destination for used vehicles. And only at Stan McNabb can you get free oil changes and free tires for the life of that vehicle. And, of course, I have Mr. Jim Freeman on, who is just an absolute joy to be up here with, and so interesting. And we were talking about the NASCARs and the drivers, and we had mentioned earlier that some of the technology that they have now that they didn't have back when it was started forming. And I remember, and you may have been there, some of the most unbelievable accidents where the car would be in the air for it seemed like a quarter of a mile sometimes and just spinning and turning and twisting. And then the drivers, I remember the one Richard Petty had, it was just unbelievable. I think you still see that on reruns.
Yeah you do. They're that one and then of course some of the multi-car ones that
right.
People got sometimes seriously hurt in or looked like they were. When I ran the Motorsports Hall of Fame, we had several of those cars in the Motorsports Hall of Fame. Now, we never put a car in there that anybody was killed in or seriously hurt in. Those were wrecks that they walked away from. So, but they were real interesting. We had Michael Waltrip's car in there one time, the one he wrecked at Bristol, so bad when the gate came open and he hit the concrete abutment in that sportsman car. I don't remember what year that was, sometime in the 1980s, but I don't remember exactly when.
Did you get to talk to those drivers much? Of course, I'm sure you did. You probably became close friends with a lot of them. How were they just away from the camera and everything else? You know, those are guys that really do live on the edge.
They were real easy to deal with, much more so than what I've heard other professional athletes are. They make what they make on that day. You know, they're kind of like golfers.
Oh, really?
As far as, I mean, they're paid by the event where they finish, and then there's points money and stuff at the end, stuff like that. But if they don't race, you know, they don't get anything.
How do they break down the money? You know, I've always wondered about that, because you have the crew, you have a number of people that are invested in that particular race. Yeah. How do they break that down?
The car owner is responsible for getting sponsorships. And the sponsorships, and then the money from purses and stuff like that. NASCAR has some programs that if you finish in the top 25 or top 30 the year before and agree to run all the races next year, you get what is basically called appearance money. But that lets a promoter know that one of the top drivers from last year is going to be at his race and he can promote him. And it's advantageous to do that. The TV money, of course, has grown probably faster than anything. And that's made a lot of difference. But for every driver there's probably a different contract. A lot of them get most of their money on souvenir sales. Earnhardt Jr., I imagine Tony Stewart does. Probably several others make more money on souvenir sales than they do.
And on advertisements.
Yeah.
I mean, endorsements. You see Dale Earnhardt Jr. about 10 or 15 times a day he's endorsing.
He's pretty well off.
It's amazing how he has maintained his popularity, and I think this is probably, he probably inherited it, but without being able to win in 3 or 4 years. Yeah. But yet it still stays at the top. And I think that says a lot for his dad. Because his dad was probably the most popular race car driver there was.
There's no question. And may still be.
Yeah, they still honor number three, don't they?
Oh, they do. They do. And always will. They always will.
That's unbelievable. Race car fans are some of the most loyal fans that you'll see anywhere in the world. And a lot of it is, maybe a little bit of it, is the heritage of the drivers. Because at one time, almost all of the drivers came from the Southeast.
Well, and it came down the family tree. The Earnhardts. Right. Ralph Earnhardt. Dale was raised working on his dad's car. And Junior was raised working on Dale's car. You know, so the Bakers are the same way. The Petties are the same way. You know, so it goes on down through the family. And I'm sure that's not the only cases, but those are probably the most obvious.
Not many people remember Dale's dad. Because when you mention Ralph, you know, it's almost taking a name that's way out of the past that hardly ever comes up. Now, when you were dealing with the drivers, who were some of your favorites when you were dealing
with them? Well, you got to like Earnhardt. Yeah. He'd cut up with you all the time. He'd scare you to death, make you think you wasn't going to show up on time and stuff like that, and then just laugh. One of the things he did to me one time, it scared me to death. He came over on Sunday night on a Friday night before a race. And we went out, a bunch of us, to a guy's houseboat down on the lake. This was at Talladega. And I was driving the Talladega pace car, and he was driving the car behind me. And we were on a two-lane road, some of which was gravel. And he'd come up behind me and bump me at about 60 miles an hour, just a little nudge, you know. He'd pick his spots, but I didn't know whether he'd pick them right or not, you know.
It's Earnhardt.
Yeah. And look back in the rearview mirror, and he's back there just dying laughing.
Well, when a man knows no fear, and he's driving your car, you had to feel a little bit comfort when you know it. He's probably the best driver in the world out there, and he's got a handle on everything.
Well, but championships.
Yeah, but when you went to what possessed you to go from Daytona to Talladega? Because that's a big move there.
Well, in Daytona, I was one of three public relations people there.
Uh-huh.
There was a guy that did road racing, another guy that did MRN and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And at Talladega, I did the public relations and marketing. So mm-hmm. it was a step up. Plus, at that particular time, I was divorced
mm-hmm.
and was not getting to see my daughter who lived in Jackson, Tennessee. So that entered into it also. I mm-hmm. wanted to be back closer to home where I could see her more than once a year. And that's another reason I went too.
Is the atmosphere different at Daytona than it
yeah,
is
a little more
Talladega?
Pressure. It's NASCAR headquarters are down there, and there's a lot of testing down there and stuff like that. Now, mm-hmm. And they do a lot more events. They just finished at 24 hours at Daytona. When they ran Saturday and finished yesterday or Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a Paul Revere, or used to be a Paul Revere race at midnight on July 3rd, and then the Firecracker 400 on the 4th. Now, I think they, I'm sure they've got a season ending sports car race down there too. But they race motorcycles. They got Bike Week down there, which is huge. Just a lot more going on down there.
Do you think that.
But I love living in Daytona. I was single then.
Daytona is a great town, but I can tell you, I was telling you this earlier, I love St. Augustine, Florida.
Yeah.
It is one of the classiest, best towns to be in, because I can remember we would go down there and take our family vacations, and sometimes we would walk the streets to 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, just absolutely fascinated with that downtown area because mm-hmm. it's so old.
Yeah.
It's probably the oldest town in the
United
States.
Well, you had the Ford up there, and then there's a yeah. couple of tourist traps up there, too. They're kind of fun. But,
of course, you got it has the golf. I mean,
oh,
golf
yeah.
has its Hall
oh,
of Fame
yeah.
there, and, mm-hmm. and you got all the other things. But Bud Mitchell and Kay, they love to go down to Talladega. I think that's Kay's big event that she waits for every year. And it has to have a special draw. But they say they've got some of the friendliest people that you'll ever want to meet down there.
They do.
Area.
They do. There are people that would come from Michigan every race mm-hmm. and people that would come up from Florida or Texas and stuff like that. And they would meet in the campgrounds at Talladega. And they mm-hmm. saw each other twice a year. They might send Christmas cards or mm-hmm. something like that. But the only other thing they really had to do with them was twice a year, and they'd camp and just have a good time together. And there's a lot of that goes on. And they opened the campgrounds at Talladega. Well, some of them come in 2 weeks ahead of time mm. to get the good spots and the RVs for the RVs and stuff. And then they can park in. We got 20,000 acres, and there was all kinds of land there for them to park on. And they'd stay there. Unless they were going in the infield, then in the infield the Wednesday before the race, they started opening that up, letting you in, or the reserve campground, things like that. But it was it starts swelling up about 2 weeks before the race.
Do you think that Kyle Busch, who is a great race car driver,
he is,
but he cannot win the fans' affection? Of course, a lot of it is just strictly his.
Yeah, you're
persona,
around smashing guitars and stuff after you win a race.
If you want to win some friendships in Tennessee, you do not go around smashing guitars. But do you think right now some of the areas are on hard times? They really are, and we've got mm-hmm. the one that really should have been in Rutherford County and ended up over in Wilson County for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that race will ever be successful? I mean, they're talking about, you know, shutting things down.
Not as a NASCAR track. I don't think it will.
I really thought that it had maybe some possibilities when they first built mm-hmm. it, and then of course hard times. It affects everything. I mean, you don't see even at Daytona and Talladega, you don't mm-hmm. see full houses like you used to.
No, it's the economy's definitely plays a role, and it's not the only time it has. When the gas prices went up way up, when early 70s or mm-hmm. mid 70s,
yeah.
something like that, they cut some of their 500 mile races to 400 miles, mm-hmm. and as a show of good faith, because people said, well, how come you let NASCAR run, you know, at 5 miles a gallon, you mm-hmm. know, when gas prices are
right.
like that? So they cut the races back to 400. But even then, the entire gas used for a race at Daytona for all 42 cars was not as much as one of the big jetliners going from New York right. to California. You know, it's all relative, just how you looked at it.
For some reason, the big tracks get a little bit more attention. But my kids, they have been to Bristol, and they said that they had much rather go to Bristol than Daytona or Talladega, because you can see everything that's going on at all time, and there's just something magical about having that many people in the mountains up there all together. It's kind of like, I guess, going to a UT football game with twice as many fans.
Yeah. For about 6 years, I was married to Carolyn Carrier, mm-hmm. who was a daughter of Larry Carrier, who owned Bristol.
Oh, okay.
And so I got special insight up there for a while. In fact, mm-hmm. We considered it one time going up there and running it for him
yeah.
when he was going to retire, and then he decided to do something else. We didn't do it. But I love it up there. I've got family in Johnson City, which is just 15 miles from Bristol, so mm-hmm. it's a good trip for me, and like you said, and you can't get a ticket for it. I mean, it's just Michael Waltrip had the best compliment, or description. Mm-hmm. He said racing at Bristol is like flying an airplane in your basement.
Ooh, that is a good description.
It is.
Now, what is the degrees that thing is banked?
Bristol's 36 degrees, Talladega's 33.
Wow. I thought there had been more of a difference with Bristol and Talladega.
No, Talladega's actually, I've been in the pace car on both of them, uh-huh. and Talladega's to me seems steeper than Bristol's, but they say 36, so we'd give them 36.
How fast do you have to go, say at Bristol, to get the car kind of stable where it's handleable?
Well, at Bristol, I'm not sure. I can give you Talladega.
Yeah,
I used to drive the pace car, give pace car rides mm-hmm. During the off season and mm-hmm. stuff. And at 101 miles an hour, you can put a round pencil on the dash going through the curve, and it won't go either way. Centrifugal force offsets gravity.
101.
Uh huh.
That's amazing. Now, who is lucky enough? I have always wanted, say, take like the new Corvettes that they have now. Mm-hmm. I always want to take one of those and put it on one of those tracks like Daytona, Talladega or something. Does that give you the rush that you really think it will?
I was privileged to drive Trans Ams and Camaro, Firebirds mm-hmm. and Camaros on those tracks. And yeah, it gives you a rush. It's it'll hold everything those cars will do, obviously. But you still got to be careful when you're going through the turns. Mm-hmm. It's like driving out of the upper left corner of your windshield. That's where the cars are.
Okay,
you're like that, and
so you have to develop a different perspective.
Yeah, you do. And you, when you're in the turns, you've got about a foot high and a foot wide out the corner of your windshield. You can see the cars on around in front of you until you come out of the turn.
Can you feel it pushing upwards towards?
Yeah.
The edge?
Oh yeah. Yeah, you can. You can.
Mm-hmm. How fast did you ever get one on it?
About 135, maybe 140.
How did it feel?
Scared the crap out of me.
And you have come back home.
Yep.
You're back with MTSU again. Mm-hmm. And tell me how it is being back home and work at the university again and all the people that you deal with. I mean,
it
has really changed over the years. It's become... like when you first started, we were a small school. When we went to school mm-hmm. over there, it just kind of a little hometown.
MTSC then.
Yeah. Not much bigger than a high school.
Yeah.
And now it's a major university.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that?
Well, I've kept an eye on it. I come back from time to time to visit, so it hadn't been like I was gone for 30 years.
Yeah.
But it's home. This is home for me. It has been since I was 10 days old. Mm-hmm. And it's I love this place. I think it's the greatest town in the United States.
It is. It is,
and
by far.
It's a great place to live, especially after living in Anniston, Alabama for a while. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of nice people in Anniston, mm-hmm. but some of the things that are there besides the nice people are just leave you wondering why you live there.
But you have a great rapport with everybody when you get here, and you see a lot of community support along with the university support. I'm talking about the teachers, faculty, and all of those like that. Mm-hmm. But... for some reason, as large as that school is, we do not have the student support that I think that we ought to have. How in the world do we get that?
Well, if you're thinking back to when I was sports and information director, when the students, we played Austin Peay and the Murphy mm-hmm. Center opened up and everything.
Right.
ESPN hadn't been developed.
Mm-hmm.
Now every basketball game in the country mm-hmm. is on ESPN 1, 2,
right.
3, 9, 10, 11, 12, however many ESPNs there are.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it kills your crowd. Because if you're any kind of a fan of any other team and your team's on TV, then you don't have to get out of your living room or anything like that. And it's, and while it's done wonders for the couch potato, it's hurt a lot of schools' MTSU size.
But do you think it's, we're considered kind of a neighborhood school because a lot of the kids that go to school mm-hmm. at MTSU are basically in the Middle Tennessee area.
Yeah.
And I guess some of them work.
Yeah, but that's changing. I mean, it's getting broader and more coming from our areas as we get more programs in. It's also helping. Dr. McPhee's done a good job of getting new programs.
But that's their school.
Mm-hmm.
That's the students' school. I mean, just like you and I, we've supported everything that our schools did when we were growing up and all the way till now. And the community still is very strong supporting MTSU.
Yeah.
And you have done a great job over there. I mean, you really have. But how in the world do you get their attention to, you know, say, you know, this is my school and I'm going to be here and support it. You know, you get free tickets and you get all of that.
Yeah.
And it's just, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
Well, of course, like anything else, I see winning's everything.
Yeah.
And that has a lot to do with it. When we beat Vanderbilt three times in a row,
mm-hmm.
our sales, ticket sales and everything was probably as high as they've been in a long mm-hmm. time. And then when the bowl team went to two bowl games in a row, there was a spike then. So I'm not sure what's going to happen this next year, but it's you know, what have you done for me lately?
But we have great teams. We really do.
This basketball team is awesome.
Rick has done a great job mm-hmm. with the girls. I mean, he mm-hmm. really has. The fans have really been pretty strong for girls, and that's basically coming out of the mm-hmm. community. But you're starting to see Kermit's team is extremely strong. Should
they'll have good crowd for Western.
If anybody knows, they
game.
Should have beat Vanderbilt. They really should. They had a couple of, should we say, bad breaks.
Let's don't go
bad
there.
Breaks
let's don't go
the
there.
End. But well, we want to let you know. The last part of the show is brought to you by At Home Care, and that's Melissa Warren's business. And they come into your home 24/7, 7 days a week, and take care of all the things that have to be done in your home to make sure that you can still stay there. And they even run errands for you and make sure that your life is what it should be. You mean you've earned your right to retire and even at home. So if that sounds good to you, give them a call at 713-4639 or check them out on the website www.athomecaretennessee.com or go by their business at 237 Castlewood Drive, Suite H, right behind the Kroger's on Memorial Boulevard.
Hello, my name is Lance Jenkins, candidate for property assessor. As your next property assessor, I will ensure that every property owner is treated fair and equally. I have over 17 years experience in the property assessor's office, serving from 1987 to 2004 as deputy assessor under former assessor Tommy Sanford. I would appreciate your vote for property assessor, early voting February 15th through February 28th. I am Lance Jenkins, and I approve this message, Lynn E. Jenkins, treasurer. Vote Lance Jenkins, property assessor.
Be a hero for kids with cancer. Join Bald in the Borough's second annual St. Baldrick's event on March 16th at 4 p.m. located in Lanes, Trains, and Automobiles in Murfreesboro. You can be a part of the excitement, whether you shave your head, volunteer, or donate. You'll be giving hope to those kids fighting childhood cancers. Go to baldintheborough.com and see how you can be a hero too. Sponsored by Murfreesboro Medical Clinic.
Visit the new Farmer's Family Restaurant in Murfreesboro today. They have fresh seafood, steaks, ribs, salads, and vegetables daily. They also have one of the best country buffets in town during lunch. Farmer's Family Restaurant also serves a great breakfast and dinner, too. Stop by Farmer's Family Restaurant today. Located off Old Fork Parkway between Lifeway Christian Bookstore and Marty and Liz Shoes. Farmer's Family Restaurant. Visit us for the best country cooking in Tennessee.
He knows Rutherford County's past, and his wisdom can give good insight into our future. It's the Truman Show. Here again, Truman Jones.
Well, Jim, this was a fast hour. I mean, it really was. And we could have sat here and talked for a couple more hours on all the things. In fact, we didn't cover all the things that I wanted to. We'll probably need an hour or two if I can get you back on the show again.
That'd be your call.
Well, actually, it becomes your show, big boy, so it'll be your call. And I am so glad that you're back here with us again. It was so much fun. We ran into each other, of all places, in Woodbury, about 3 or 4 weeks ago?
Christmas dinner or something.
It's been some time ago, over at the Cannon County Courier, and got to see a lot of my old buddies I hadn't seen in a long time. And you still get out a lot. And I know that working for MTSU, your old school, and get to see all the people here again and get to develop all of the new friendships. I did want to tell you that I had talked to Marsha Porterfield Littlefield, and Bubba was in there watching TV, I think. and I mentioned the fact that you were going to be on the show today, and it just tickles them to death.
Well, good. That's nice.
It's nice to renew these friendships, like I said earlier. And tomorrow, we're going to have John Blankenship on, and Avent Lane may come with him. We're going to talk about a number of things, and he may even bring some CDs of some of the songs that he's written. I mean, it's so entertaining. He has more talent than just about anybody I know of, because he can do so many things and do them all well. And then, as you know, we were talking about earlier, we're going to have Coach Dean Hayes on Wednesday.
Yes.
And that's going to be over at the new restaurant that's just opened up, the Farmer's Family Market, and we're going to do a live show over there that day. So you're welcome to come
I'll make
over.
Sure he gets over there.
Yeah, and you're welcome to come over and eat with us. That food is just out of this world. And you come on again with me.
All right, I will someday.
You promise right there.
You get a slow day. You get a slow day.
Hand up and oath. We'll see you guys tomorrow at 2 o'clock.